Everyone, and welcome to the Planet FM meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6. My name's Judy and I'm an alcoholic and will be chairing our meeting this morning. Could you please help me open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer? God. Grant me the serenity.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thank you all for joining us this morning. Today, our speakers are Georgina, Bex and Siobhan, and they will be sharing on their experience, strength and hope. Okay, so Georgina, would you like to start us off today, please?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Judy. Hi, I'm Georgina. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm a very grateful alcoholic, and that was not always the case for me. So my drinking would have started in my teenage years, and at the time I thought that it was sort of on a par with my peers, so my drinking was kind of just on the weekends, you know. But even early on, I kind of got the sense that I was sort of, yeah, I was always seeming to go a bit further than everyone else, and the consequences were a bit more because I was the one that would come to school on Monday and somehow the teachers would know about what I had done. So, you know, that was a bit of an issue early doors. And then, you know, it kind of just, for me, I feel like it progressed in stages from there. So when I went to university, one of the things that I discovered, because I didn't have class every day, was that I could drink during the week, and I also discovered drinking at home. So those two for me were big escalations in my drinking, but it felt like I was an adult. It felt like really sophisticated, even though the fact of the matter was I was drinking at home by myself, you know, and that was, I just thought that was fine. And that sort of became cemented into my routine. So by the time I got my first full-time job, you know, I was getting resentful about the fact that I no longer had that weeknight to drink. And to be honest, it wasn't very long before that just sort of crept back in. You know, and I just started drinking at home alone again after work. And as I kept going on, you know, in my journey, I was just, the consequences were starting to build up, you know, like every time I was drinking with my friends, I was the one that was getting really rowdy, getting really aggressive, getting, you know, into a state that was, you know, inciting a lot of fear in my friends. And I was starting to get people asking me, like, about my drinking, you know, had I thought about, you know, making it, like, less, like doing it less often or drinking, you know, less when I was drinking. But that didn't really, you know, that wasn't what I wanted, you know, and it was the start of me sort of moving the goalposts so that the drinking that I was doing, which was becoming more frequent and in higher quantities, that it just became more acceptable, as well as the consequences of my drinking. So, you know, at the start, like I thought, you know, getting really aggressive and getting really insulting when I was drinking, I thought that that was, you know, not acceptable. But by the end of my drinking, you know, I was like, nope, that's part of my identity and you just have to accept that. And it didn't matter how you felt, you know, it was just, there were all these delusions that were starting to build up. I was under the delusion that I could control my drinking, or that I could enjoy my drinking, and that was absolutely not the case, you know. And I started to lose things. I started to lose friendships. I lost my partner of 5 years, and I, although he didn't say that it was because of the drinking, I knew it was because of the drinking, you know. My rock bottom came about not long after I lost my mother. You know, the grief of losing my mother kind of, it felt like the rug was pulled out from under me and I was in free fall, and my drinking just escalated to a point that I didn't think possible. And it was one night that I was out drinking with friends that I went into a blackout and I harmed myself, and or tried to, and they had to call the police, and the police took me to, you know, hospital, and I was put on overnight watch. And that was the point at which I was kind of shocked into realizing, like, I cannot understand how it's come to this. I have absolutely no idea. And there was so much fear in me and confusion. And it was the first time that I was able to get honest about my drinking and the way that I felt. And, you know, through a series of suggestions and referrals, I made my way to my first AA meeting. You know, I remember looking up the AA meetings and choosing, like, I actually made a choice as to which first meeting. I was like, I'll go on a Wednesday. And I was like, okay, which of the two Wednesday ones will I go to? I was in Ponsonby at the time, and there was the Expect Miracles Step 11 meditation meeting. And I was like, I can't go to that one because that seems like an advanced class. Like, I can't, I'm not ready for that one. And then the other one was Young People in Sobriety. And I was like, am I young enough? And then I just said, just go to this meeting. And I walked all the way up Ponsonby Road, and I was getting super resentful because everyone was out at the bars and restaurants having fun. And I was just like, this is ridiculous. Why do I have to fall on my sword and get sober? But I got to that meeting. I sat up the back. I didn't talk to anyone. And about 20 minutes in, I just broke down and started crying, you know. And I was someone that was very guarded and had my walls up, but I was done. I was broken sufficiently to the point where I was crying in front of a group of strangers, and somehow, in my heart of hearts, I knew that this was the right place to be vulnerable. And after that meeting, some women came up to me and they gave me their numbers, and this shows you how broken I was, because I let one of them hug me, and I'm not a hugger. I'm not a hugger, but I am now. And yeah, they just said, just keep coming back. There's another meeting here on Saturday, and we go to the food court afterwards, you know, just keep coming back. And I did, you know, and the more I came back, the more I found connection. And I didn't know how desperately I needed connection. I had no idea. And yeah, it was just the start of me understanding exactly what it was that I suffered from. I learned about alcoholism. Like, I had called myself an alcoholic, but I didn't know what alcoholism was. I didn't know that it lived within me and not within the bottle. And I didn't know that there was actually a solution that didn't involve drinking. I didn't know that there was a 12-step program that would enable me to live a life that I really valued, and that was that I was actually participating in, rather than just sort of being on the sidelines of. So it was suggested to me, you know, get a sponsor, buy yourself the big book, do the 12 steps, get into service, get a home group, you know. And I was grasping onto all of these suggestions because I knew I couldn't trust my own thinking. I knew that my first thought was often wrong, you know. So I was doing what was suggested, and I was changing slowly and gradually, but I was changing. I was becoming a person that could just take on life no matter what it threw at me, one day at a time, and get my head on the pillow sober at night. And that to me was a miracle, and that to me I knew was not my doing. That was a power greater than me. That was the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was my sponsor. That was the steps, and that was my higher power, you know. And these are all things that I've come to believe in and accept and actually be grateful for, because it enables me to, yeah, I can just live a life that is beyond my wildest dreams. It is not a life of material wealth. It is not a life of success in the classic sense of, like, fame and fortune and all of that. It's a life where I don't have that storm in my head. I don't have self-hatred. I can just, I can just be, you know, that peace and serenity that was talked about in my first meeting that I was so desperate for. I actually get glimpses of that now. And that's incredible. And that is beyond my wildest dreams. And it is exactly what I need. You know, I didn't think that I wanted that, but it's been amazing. So I'm very grateful for what I've found here. And I'm grateful that I don't have to do this alone. So thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Georgina, for sharing your story. Bex, would you like to share with us now, please?
Yeah, thanks, Judy. Hi, my name's Bex.
Sorry.
Yeah, thanks, Judy. Hi, my name's Bex, and I'm an alcoholic. Experience, strength, and hope. Thanks for your share, Georgina. That was inspirational, and it made me think as well about my own kind of journey in AA and what's happened for me over the time that I've been in the program. I think, like a lot of people who come into the rooms, my childhood was a bit odd, and there are a few things going on in my family home. Some of my early memories were of my mum and her drinking. And one really early memory I have is of walking in on her naked in the fetal position in the bathroom when I was a child. And I didn't really understand that, but that image and memory persisted with me for a long time. And I guess that dysfunction was normal in our household. There was no small glasses of beer or wines with lunch. It was when somebody opened a bottle, they would drink everything in the house. And if they drank everything in the house, then they would go out looking for something else to drink. And it was so normal going to these parties as a child and using like the old the wine box bag, you know, blow it up as a pillow and fall asleep. And for a long time I didn't realize that's not normal to drink that way with no kind of stopping point. It was what my family did, and as I kind of met friends through school, it was what my school friends did as well. We were all binge drinkers, and personally, I was always looking for something more fun, something more exciting, another party to go to. So in summary, I guess I never drank very well, and it was only coming into AA that made me realize that. But I guess similarly to the last year, my drinking was exacerbated by my mother's death, and regrettably, she died of terminal bone cancer. So it was a really horrific thing to watch happen as she kind of dissolved. And it was awful as well, because the fact that she had terminal bone cancer meant that she had to stop drinking. So it was the first time in my life, really, that I could have a relationship with my mother, and yet she was on the way out. And there was so much feeling and emotion there that I'd never really experienced before in my life. And I had nowhere to put it, you know, going through it and watching her die. But also having this relationship with her that I'd never had before. And then, having that rug pulled out from under you, when she did pass away. And, coming from a time and a place where everything was good and happy on the surface, but it was just real, like, fecal matter underneath, right? So I emceed her funeral, and I wore this yellow sunshiny dress, and I was cracking jokes and talking to people, and then afterwards I drank 3 bottles of Riesling and blacked out and was howling like an animal in the shower afterwards. And my drinking just, it went on that way, because I was unwilling to feel these feelings and this grief. And the only way I could think to get out of it was to drink. And so that's what I did to try and move myself through the emotion and the feeling that I had no way to sit with or to process. And so I did that for 6 months or so, until I went missing one night, and my husband called the police, called the hospital, And I bounced in the next day because I was so oblivious to the fact that he was upset and worried about me. And yeah, that was the day that I called the AA 0800 number, and I spoke to a woman named Kim, and she said to me, hey, why don't you come to this meeting? I'll meet you there. And so I rocked up. I'd injured myself, grazed my knee, hobbling in, hurt pride, and sat down and listened to other people share about their own experience, strength and hope. And yeah, I was desperate. I think I'd kind of blown up my life. I had a conversation with my husband that went something like, you know, this is fucked. You can't treat me this way. Something needs to change. And for me, that was the motivation to go to AA, was the fear of losing that relationship. But as I've worked the program and gone through the steps and got a sponsor, I've learned a lot more about myself, and I've realized that actually I'm a decent human being, and it's worth making changes in my life for me. Not to say that my husband isn't amazing, but at the end of the day, I think that the things that I've learned in AA have allowed me to hold both the beautiful and mundane things that we experience in life together, and given me space to be open and honest about what's really going on for me, and allowed me to realize when something is feeling off, and given me tools to choose behaviors that are better than drinking, like reaching out to somebody else and the rooms, calling my sponsor, going to a meeting, or doing some service. And I think, the world is much more beautiful than it was before, because I'm willing to see the pockets of beauty amongst all the other crap that is just part of life. Life will keep lifing to us, and we'll always have ups and downs, but it's kind of up to us to decide if we're going to take it in our stride or if we're going to let it trip us up. Thanks for asking me to share.
Thanks very much, Bex. And Siobhan, would you like to share, please?
Hi, I'm Siobhan, and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for asking me to share, Judy. I am an alcoholic, and I feel like I was born an alcoholic. I grew up in an alcoholic family. I grew up in a family where somebody had a drink in their hand every day, and also grew up in a home like some of the other people have shared today, where when there was a party, it was drink until there's nothing left. So when I hit my teenage years, around about 14, I think I had my first drink. I drank how I'd watched everyone else around me drink as a child, and didn't really see anything unusual about it. The only thing unusual about it was that my friends didn't drink like I drank. They didn't drink until they passed out, and they didn't drink the quantities that I drank, and they didn't drink for days and days. I was always the last person to go home, and I always wanted more, so I used to pair up with people that drank and partied like I did. I realized by the age of about 17 that I actually had a problem, and I moved countries. I moved to Australia and left my drinking family group behind me. And I stayed sober for a short time there, but I soon picked up and discovered also, you know, drugs as well. Sydney was a bit of a party town. And by the age of 21, I started getting myself into a bit more trouble and realized that I needed to come home and go back to school. And I came back to New Zealand, you know, knowing still that I had a problem. I reached out to lots of different things. I think I went to CADS at 21. Then I met my future husband, and he liked to drink also. So we then drank our way all the way through our 30s. I had a job with a that took me overseas, and it meant that I could drink whenever I wanted to, really. I always promised myself that I would stop drinking when I had children and when I got married. And so at the age of about 30, before we were about to get married, I went back to CADS again. My primary hope from going to CADS was that on the night of my wedding that I wouldn't somehow get a taxi back to town in order to go out, because I'd started drinking and I wouldn't be able to stop. I did manage to not do that. Then I thought that I would stop drinking when I had my children, but by the time I think my first child or second child was born, I started getting back to that bottle of wine a night. So at this stage, I'd stop binge drinking. I'd still binge drink at parties, but it was just more the daily drinking that concerned me more, like looking forward to that 6 p.m. or 5 p.m. or then starting to get earlier, needing to have that glass of wine to, you know, bring down my day. I was alone at home a lot with the children. I had 3 kids under 5 and they were beautiful. I had an amazing life. There was really no issues. I just wasn't managing it very well, and I felt like I had no one to turn to. And so alcohol seemed to be my best friend. It would take the pain away. It would get me through to 8 o'clock at night. And then later on from there, I think I started to then join up with other school mums from school or playgroup, you know, and the ones that like to drink. If you sat me down at a ladies' lunch, I'd always like engineer myself to be near the group that drank the most. And it just continued like that. By this stage, I was helping my ex-husband now to run a business, and I was coming into my 40s. So by the age of my 40s, I was a daily drinker. The kids were a little bit older, and by daily drinking, it meant every day I needed to have that bottle of wine. I couldn't go a day without a drink by about my early 40s. By my mid-40s, I became a dependent drinker. The difference with the two is that daily is sort of like, yeah, you know, you need it, you want it, and dependent means that you actually need it. You physically need to have that drink to get through to the next day. And, you know, they would start getting earlier and earlier. I started drinking all during the day at that point, and I was trying to run a business, trying to keep the kids picked up from school. I was hiding everything. I was absolutely terrified. My anxiety was, felt like my skin was peeling off me all the time, because I was so scared of people finding out that I was having to manage my life while searching for alcohol, keeping it nearby, going to the supermarket, going to different supermarkets, going to different bottle shops, having it hidden around the house, and nobody knew this terrible secret. Everyone just knew I was acting really, really, really strangely. The kids couldn't quite put a handle on it. You know, I couldn't really speak properly by the time it was like 6 o'clock at night. And still I was up at 6 a.m. and going to bed at 10 a.m. running businesses and schools and things like that, and attending social events, looking amazing. So when things finally hit the fan, it was a really, really big downfall for me and everybody else. There was a lot of embarrassment around me being an alcoholic and me not being okay. And that was also really, really hard to cope with. I was put into rehab after I collapsed after a family holiday trip because I had such bad kidney and liver pain. So I was taken to hospital. They discovered I had a drinking problem. I had an enlarged liver and I had other organ damage by that stage. I was given a detox protocol. That was my first hospital detox. After that, I went to a rehab for 10 days. Straight after that, I came out and went straight back into work. I managed to stay sober for a few months. But as soon as things got tough again, I picked up a drink because it was the only way I knew how to deal with life or with problems or with stress. I had another period of sobriety. I think it was about 5 months, and this time it was another hospital detox. By the time I got to my third hospital detox, I'd pretty much been kicked out of my family home. My children weren't speaking to me, and my brother and sister had to come from different parts of the world to keep me in hospital, get me to hospital and keep me in hospital. And by that stage, I'd been told by doctors that I would probably be dead within 6 months, 3 to 6 months tops, because of the damage I'd done to my body, and that they also wouldn't accept me back into hospital again, which was quite terrifying. I also had to miss one of my daughter's birthday parties. They wouldn't let me out for it, and I just couldn't understand why. And I had been in AA for a couple of those months, but the change for this third one was about surrender. I had to surrender to the fact that I had a disease, and that The disease meant I could not drink again. Previously, I'd been going to AA with the aim of I'll go to AA or do all this rehab work until I can go back out and start drinking like the normal people around me. I can just have one drink or two drinks and then I can go back to my leading my normal life. But an alcoholic body doesn't work that way. It's a disease. It's vested inside us. Some of it's genetic possibly, some of it's cultural from watching the way other people around me drank as I grew up. But whatever it is, it doesn't matter. I couldn't solve it by myself. At this stage, after my third hospital detox, I had really no friends and everybody really distanced themselves from me. Family members from my extended family didn't really want to have anything to do with me and I had to start life again. I stayed at a home of a godmother for a year and or 6 months and I'd never lived in a home where there was no alcohol because my family home, we'd always had drinks every night. I'd never lived in a sober home. I just didn't understand the whole thing of not having a drink at the end of the day. In AA, I was surrounded by hope. I did what they suggested after I finally surrendered and I did 90 meetings in 90 days and I found a sponsor. It didn't all go smoothly. I had three sponsors that fired me because I wouldn't do what I was told. And I ended up with a male sponsor, which is also not what you're supposed to do. But I stayed with AA and every time I fell down, they invited me back. They said, keep coming back. At one particular meeting, I was told by one of the long time sober people that, what did he say? He said, maybe just don't leave again. And that really struck me. I thought, well, imagine that. Imagine if I didn't fall over again. Maybe I could just stay sober. I've now been in sobriety for 7 years and I'll be coming up to my 5th year this year. My life's so different. The people who are in my life are really different. The 12-step program has given me a rule book to follow. I didn't have any rule books. You know, I didn't have any rules before I grew up where all the rules were very blurry. There were no boundaries in my family upbringing. So I have boundaries now and the steps have taught me to question my honesty and when things aren't going right, what is my part in it? There's always a part where I'm not playing true to myself. I am surrounded by a lot of good people. My children really love and respect me now. That's probably the one thing that did keep me sober. That was the thing that kept me going when things were really horrible. And now I'm really proud to be a member of AA and I'm really, really proud to actually be an alcoholic that's survived this. It kills, you know, people don't live through it. And I feel grateful that I've been able to have a second chance at life. So thanks for asking me to share.
Thanks so much, Siobhan. Right, that's all we have time for today. So thank you to Georgina, Bex and Siobhan for joining us in the studio and to all of you for listening. We are on air every Sunday morning at 10:45 a.m. here on Planet FM 104.6. If you wish to speak to someone directly, please call 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 6757 or go to the AA website at aa.org.nz where you can find a whole raft of information about the fellowship. And could we all close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer, please? God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
We can lay under the sun, like it's your idea of fun. Let it glisten on your skin. Sun-kissed melanin. We'll make our way into the night. Just like the island we fly. Tonight is really tropical. Possible. Tonight is really tropical. I can't even. Possible. What do we say? Let's get away.
to turn up a Saturday.